So welcome everybody to our next podcast. And as we will see over this month, we've been exploring self-esteem and love and relationships and intimacy and friendships, because it's not all about Valentine's Day in February. There's so much more. And February's podcasts are in partnership with Fleur, an alcohol-free spirit from the Netherlands made for mixing. Some of you would have seen some stuff that we did with them before Christmas. And I think it's very exciting how many brands are coming from all over the world now. And it comes in four editions: original, amber, pink, and agave. And it's something for everybody's taste. So floral, spiced, raspberry, or smoked. And they're currently offering a 15% off with the code LOVEFLEURE on their shop website. So you can follow them on social media for cocktail recipes and tips, and look out for them at Fleur_drinks. And all of their details will be on the blog and everything to go with this. So today we're talking to two really exciting guests. We're talking to Rose Romain, who is a professional creative and trauma-informed recovery coach. And we're also talking to artist and punk and songwriter Louisa, who I'm very excited about anyway, because she's one of my favourite people to listen to. She keeps me going through the day, along with loads of other artists in Club Soda. So we're going to be talking a lot about sober sex and relationships and intimacy. But first of all, I wanted to get you to introduce yourselves a bit more. Rose, why are you here?
Why am I here? This is a great question. Thank you, firstly, for having us on the show. It's such a delight to be here. I love the work that you do at Club Soda, Laura, and so that we get this opportunity and platform to all chat together. I am here to talk a little bit about the fact that Lou and I have a podcast called Sober Sex, in which we give space for a conversation around intimacy, integrity, and sex, and all things intimate and sexual within sobriety or not, you know, and what it looked like before and after. I'm here because I am sober 8.5 years. I came through really quite a traditional route, but my work has taken me in a very different non-traditional kind of recovery route. And I'm thrilled to be here. And yeah, I'm also a voice actor. And, you know, I worked for a long time in the theatrical business and as an actor, and took a bit of a swerve a couple of years ago where I wanted to start giving back. So that's a bit more about me, Lou.
Fantastic. I think, Rose, we must have given up at the same time. I gave up in May 2012.
Yes, same.
So that's clearly same. Time. That's
ah! 2012, what was going on? Some starter aligning for a less of a dickhead version of myself.
Louisa, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm here because I love an excuse to talk about all of this stuff. I have no professional qualifications in the recovery world except for having been clean and sober for a number of years. I got sober in May of 2006. So May babies, or May young adults, I guess. And yeah, I mean, the sobriety obviously informs my work a lot, just because so much of kind of my creative life is fueled by ideas of like craving and addiction and kind of wanting to stop but not being able to. And I think that like when kind of channeled intentionally, all of those feelings can be really useful. And additionally, like as Rose mentioned, we have a podcast together to kind of talk about the sexual aspect of what recovery or sobriety might look like. And you know, we've been doing it since about July. So it was definitely a quarantine creative project, and it's continued on because it's been so enlightening to talk to so many people about kind of what their sex lives look like. My favorite talk, especially in recovery. So thank you so much for having us on, Laura. It's really exciting to talk to you.
Well, it's really interesting because you're both two creative professionals. And, you know, there's this great myth that in order to be creative, you have to be pissed, you know, and everyone will always pull on those great examples like Hemingway and others who are always slightly drunk. Do you have to be drunk to be creative, or do you think it's actually better without?
I think it actually hinders it, but that illusion definitely needs to be smashed in the beginning, because that was something aligned my identity, my drinking identity with. I definitely thought I was sort of I remember even writing it and listening to Leonard Cohen and sending an email to everybody while I was drinking a bottle of wine when I'd moved to Paris and saying, you know, I'm just like a female Leonard Cohen now or something, you know, thinking that this was, I was on some spiritual hierarchy of lushness. Do you know what I mean? And just wasn't the fucking case, really, because there's nothing more uncreative than having to placate yourself. What would you say about that, Lou?
Yeah, I mean, I think that for me, at least, it took a long time, not a long time. It took like probably between 6 and 9 months to start like reconnecting with my creative self. Like for a while, it took a minute to kind of figure out how it felt to be creative without being fucked up. But now, like, I think, again, as a creative professional, like the idea of trying to either make music or especially like tour while still drinking and using is just nightmarish. Like I have no idea. Like my body can barely handle it, like given impeccable care. So I cannot imagine how like my mental health, my physical health, my emotional health could handle any of this stuff, like without being in an active kind of sober state. Like the idea is literally impossible. I have no idea how people do it.
No, I don't either. But you talked about a very interesting time point, which is at 6 to 9 months. 6 to 9 months for me, I felt my activist self came back. I was able to engage with issues. And I think whether it's creativity or whether it's your activism or whether it's anything else, that's a period that I think is quite important in changing your drinking. And probably also one of the points where you begin to reevaluate your relationships with people, because of course, for the first 6 months, you're probably in this up and down of, I'm giving something up, it's terrible. Oh, I'm feeling quite nice. Oh no, it's terrible today, but that was brilliant today. And that journey. And so suddenly you begin to open yourself up to beginning to look at relationships, friendships, and sex and intimacy. Where do you think those issues came into your timeline for what was for your recovery timeline in terms of beginning to open up yourself to those that thought around sex and intimacy?
Oh my god. I mean, I got so to be kind of
did you jump straight into sober dating? Did you get really excited about it? Was it part of the journey, or did you hold off all of that and concentrate on yourself before you could even begin to think about another person?
I mean, for me, like, I got sober when I was 20 and I was like so out of control on every level. I was just like a maniac for anything. Like, it was kind of like whack-a-mole when it came to addiction. Like, whatever I was doing that was kind of destructive behavior, like if you stopped one, the other would pop up. And so, like, and I was also in treatment for addiction for like my first 9 months, where if it was possible to like do more damage, I don't think it was possible to do more damage than I did there. But that being said, like, I was perpetually trying to be in relationships with people, especially like while I was in sober living, while I was trying to like, everybody around me was like, please just like focus on your personal growth. And I was like, what the fuck does that mean? And like acted out some more. And it wasn't until like, I think literally a week after my first year anniversary of getting sober that I met the person that I was going to be in a live-in long-term relationship with. It was like my first healthy relationship. And I mean, like, none of that was intentional in a positive way. If anything, the opposite. It was just like, how can I make this more difficult for myself? How can I fall in love with inappropriate people constantly and then like have sex and then just be pining for something all that, you know, like it was horrendous. But I think that experience and then being humbled by like, oh, this is what happens if I stop like hunting people and stop trying to use people to kind of make me feel different than I feel, and focus on my recovery, then I can actually be in a healthy, intentional relationship with a healthy person who supports my recovery, which was very different than what had been going on previously.
Yeah. And drinking, of course, does really ruin your judgment. And so you're craving reassurance all the time, but you're doing it in a very self-destructive way. And it's not really very healthy. And particularly if you're feeling some great shame and upset about your drinking, that you definitely latch on to all the wrong people. How was that for you, Rose?
Yeah, I had a really unusual experience at the beginning because part of my drinking kind of looked like what Lou was just saying when she got sober, actually. I was just like, I really enjoyed sex, like, and I still do, which is the great news about recovery. You can still enjoy sex. Yay! I really enjoyed sex with both men and women. And so was, but my judgment was getting very poor when I was drinking at the end. And I was finding that I was kind of using my sex as a currency. I wasn't prostituting myself per se, but I was very much kind of using it to get what I wanted, to get into situations where I could get more free drinks or whatever. Kind of, I didn't really see it happening, but now when I came into recovery and looked back, I realized that's what was happening. And so there definitely needed to be a period where I didn't. And I think I lasted about 29 days of my first stint at recovery where I was like able to abstain, and I was just like, this is bullshit. If I'm giving up drinking, I'm not giving up my other favorite thing. And and you know, it was weird. It was really weird at first. I slept with a couple of randos and was just like, this is awkward, what the fuck is going on? And then I met my husband. He wasn't my husband when I met him, like, he's my husband now. And this is one of the things about coming through traditional recovery. There's all these sayings like, you know, don't get into relationships too early on and things like that. And I went to treatment as well here in France, didn't speak a lick of French, but went anyway because I had nowhere else to go. And then went into like a shelter to live in as well because I didn't have any money coming out. And all the while I sort of stayed in that relationship with that person that I'd met, and we both tried to stay away from each other, which usually increases a bond. but fortunately my incredible husband had amazing boundaries, and so when I came out of treatment, for example, I was like, oh, I'll just move in with you. And he was like, no. And I was like, what do you mean? And he was like, you got to sort yourself out, and was always very much from that standpoint, which I don't believe we would be married today if he hadn't have been so like that. And he's continued to be like that. He's somebody who really knows how to take care of himself, which is a really beautiful thing, I think, to witness in another human. So that's what happened to me.
Well, that's really interesting because you're both great testaments for beginning to make great choices once you're not alcohol fueled. And I guess I could put myself in that as well, in the fact that Drew and UC, who I co-founded Club Soda with, were both two of my first sober dates. And I'm still living with UC. I think he'd prefer I wasn't, but anyway. but let's take a step back because, you know, if I think about all the questions that come up in Club Soda, people are very anxious about a couple of things, particularly around dating, which is, first of all, how early you might disclose that you're not drinking, particularly on dating sites and stuff like that. And then that a lot of people feel pressured to drink during the date. How would you begin to suggest people navigate that? And what things should they be have in their mind when they're going on those occasions?
I really think, and this is what I did, and it doesn't work for everybody, but when people come to me and ask me about that, I'm like, wear your sobriety like a badge of honor. Do you know what I mean? Just like lay it out there and let it be. You want to find somebody who's like comfortable with it. Do you know what I mean? I certainly didn't want to be in partnership and relationship with somebody who was going to be like, this is fucking weird. Why are you not drinking? Like, what's wrong with you? Because that would already be like, well, you're just not some, if you don't kind of get it, then we're probably not on a level. Do you know what I mean? Like, I wanted to have true communication and partnership with somebody. So I don't know. Some people might suggest like going real gentle and not saying anything, but I'm just like, fucking wear that shit and just be like, I am sober. It's a choice I am making for myself and I'm really proud of it. Let's move on from the conversation and go somewhere else. Somebody might not feel confident enough to do that, and I totally understand. Then you can wait a little bit or just feel it out. You know, you don't have to disclose everything and you don't have to get complete strangers or randos like a seal of approval around your sobriety. But I think the danger can be when people go into those intimate dating situations that everybody that they meet, they're kind of looking for, please reaffirm my decision. Please reaffirm my decision about my choice to be sober, alcohol free. And actually it needs to be your decision and something you feel really good in. And then from there, you can go into a space of like, I knew when I stopped, I couldn't go back. I was very sick. And although I hated recovery initially, and I really did, and it was a long part of the journey for me to really hate it, I kind of owned it, you know? I owned that I hated it, but I was fucking doing it, you know? That's my experience, strength, and hope on that.
What about you, Louisa?
I mean, it's interesting because, like, kind of between starting this relationship that I'm in presently with a person who's not sober and who I do not believe has a drinking problem, it was the first time in my life that I'd been on apps and stuff, and I believe that I put it in my kind of dating profile as like sober, not vanilla. So it was important to kind of, for me at least, especially around like sex and dating, to let people know what I was into specifically and what I was not into. And again, like this, I had started dating at that point at around 10 years of recovery. So I was very comfortable within my kind of skin and my identity as a sober person. But I think that something that was really helpful when I first got sober and was kind of like putting myself out there, even though it was like before dating apps were invented, oh my God, was that it was very important for me to see this as an incredibly punk rock choice, that the decision to kind of live with like life on life's terms and making an intentional choice not to destroy myself and to not like check out or numb myself from the world was really like to attach to that part of the sober identity as opposed to like rehab is for quitters was like really important and affirming. And it helped me be my own best advocate when it came to recovery. And it also helped me, like, it was very important for me to really on a daily basis kind of prioritize my sobriety above all things, because if I didn't kind of lead with that, my people pleasing or my like desire to be liked and desired would kind of eclipse any, like I still didn't really have a strong idea of how to be myself comfortably. So to kind of really anchor in that of like, this is punk, this is important, this is a choice I make for like my own creativity, that helped me defend it whenever anybody kind of questioned me or was like, oh my God, that's so boring, you're sober. It's like, okay. You know, like at the beginning, especially, I felt like I had to be a good defender of my sobriety because, like, you know, I think we live in a culture that's not, that makes it very convenient and easy to want to check out, you know, especially right now.
I think it's what I'm hearing is some really strong themes. First of all, about treating yourself with consent, which I believe is really important, which is, you know, this is what I need. It's not about me continuing to reduce my needs in order to be loved or wanted by somebody. And one of those needs is putting your sobriety at the top of the agenda. And therefore, you do need to be a bit punk about it. For me, it was an act of, you know, for me, giving up drinking became a political act. I really enjoyed going into the pub with all of my political colleagues afterwards and not drinking and this act. I know that's difficult for a lot of people, but underneath that, however loudly or quietly you do it, is that idea that now you're making decisions that are right for you and you're the priority. Which means, I guess, that if people aren't interested or don't want to date you because you're not drinking, then it's a really good early dickhead detector, right?
Totally.
Yeah.
So don't see somebody being upset with you for not drinking or not wanting to go to a pub on your first date as a failure on your part, but see it as a lucky escape from somebody who wasn't going to be right for you.
100%. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And I mean, I think, like, again, it's a very evident and like bright litmus test of like, is this person going to support my best interests? Because if they need me to drink in order to make them feel comfortable, even though it compromises my integrity, like, should I be dating that person? Like, oh, fuck no. Like, as you said, an early dickhead detector.
Yeah, absolutely. And then that brings you on to like those sexual experiences where it may be that, you know, from the age of 14 for me, that I'd only really had sex through the prism of being slightly drunk. That's not strictly true, actually. I did do a lot of alternative sex scene, and that is actually a good space to be sober in, and people respect that. But in terms of sort of, you know, making inappropriate passes at people in clubs and all of that sort of stuff, which, to be honest, if I'd been a man, would have been a real far more of a conflict in terms of power dynamics and relationships. How do you begin to even unpick what you think you want from a sexual and intimate relationship? And how do you even, some people are really scared of having sex. From all the guests you've talked to, where do people go with some of that? How do you even begin to, it's a bit like having the light on for the first time when you're quite young, isn't it?
Totally. I think like self-exploration is a big part of having sex with other people. And, you know, we talked about this just before the show started about like wanking, masturbation or whatever. Like self-exploration is key to then being intimate with somebody else. So I think, you know, take the time to get to know yourself because you're going to have a lot more time on your hands initially.
I think it's a great way to not drink, actually, if you're
feeling. It is a really good way to not drink. And there's loads of really good, like, ethical porn out there. I think when we, I don't know, like, if I ever watched porn before I got sober, it was just like, oh, fucking X-Tube or porn, or like, whatever. But there's so much good, like, healthy porn out there, you know, if that's an interest for you. And there's so much to discover in this landscape. And I think we get a really narrow view around what sex is, what's sexy. And I think it's like culinary flavors, you know, there are so many different choices. And it's fun because it's like, well, now I'm sober. Hopefully I'll be sober. I intend on being sober for the rest of my life. But like, I want somewhere to go. I want a journey to go on, you know, I want to have an adventure with this.
I think it's the bit that you said that, you know, your new identity doesn't come into play till quite a way into your sobriety journey. And part of that is you are a rounded individual. It's not just about how you are when you're out socially with people, right, which I think could take a good 6 months. It's how you are in every situation begins to change and shift and beginning to understand what you want and what you need. And so I guess you're right. You know, exploring all of these things is part of that identity. A journey of finding the identity, the hidden you underneath.
And also I think at the beginning, you know, just knowing and giving yourself to say, well, it might change from what I thought it looked like, because I was always thought I was really good in bed until I got sober. And then I was like, God, I'm less interested in pleasing the other person, because I just want someone to stay the fucking night. Do you know what I mean? It suddenly becomes something totally different, you know? And if you don't feel like doing it in the beginning, don't do it. Like, don't force yourself through anything your body's not like down for, you know. Your body will, like, if you listen to it, give you some really clear messages.
Yeah, absolutely. What about you, Louisa?
I mean, I think for quite a long time, like kind of Rose mentioned, it took me a while to figure out kind of who I was and what I needed sexually and romantically, and to be able to kind of advocate for that and ask for it. And I think for me, because of the modality that I got sober within, it was really easy to confuse kind of like purity or piousness or kind of almost puritanical Judeo-Christian ideas of like how I must be as like a good person with how to equate that with my actual desires, my actual sexuality. So it kind of required like almost permission to really learn to express myself and my needs and really enjoy them in sobriety without this kind of old paradigm of like what being quote unquote good means. And so that was a fucking, like, I pray for anybody listening to this, it does not take you as long as it took me. But also I think part of that was like kind of intentionality. I didn't realize until I got sober and until I'd spent a while being sober that I was disassociative most of the time whenever I was kind of in any aroused state. Like if I was excited, like had a crush on somebody, I would like immediately leave my body. So this idea of I had to really intentionally, like, and this, I big advocate for therapy, learn how to differentiate between arousal and anxiety because they felt exactly the same. And often the anxiety would be my body telling me that this is not a safe person. This is not a safe situation. You don't want to be doing this. And arousal was just like, ah. So to like learn how to like start to listen to my body and be a better ally to it, like not abandon myself in situations that felt unsafe, whether they actually were like going to be traumatizing situations or if it was just, you know, like, this is not the right person for me. This doesn't feel right. You know, I think it took a long time to start to do all that. And like, and that can be very heavy work, especially because a lot of us, you know, like put ourselves in potentially traumatizing situations when we're drinking and using, you know. So to be patient with ourselves and very loving with ourselves. And I think, you know, you mentioned like a consent-based relationship with self. That was really important to develop in sobriety because I had like no possible concept of that when I was out. Like that was not something that came to the table ever. So, you know, I think it can be a very slow journey, but it's so rewarding ultimately.
And I think that slow journey is an important one because we expect, great, now we're sober. Everyone says sober sex is great. Go and have sex for the first time. And of course, it's not great because you have to take time to get used to things for a start, but also understand that that is also now a new journey for you, learning to communicate with somebody, learning to navigate. But it also doesn't have to be perfect. No sex is perfect unless it's, you know, directed by a male director in a movie, probably. you know, actually most sex is awkward and funny and doesn't always result in an orgasm and all of those things. And that's all okay. And but you can learn to accept that in sobriety. Whereas when you're drinking, you often think it was successful when it probably wasn't. And then you quickly push it out of your mind by just drinking some more so that you don't ever have to think about that again. And you can live with the myth that you have these great sexual conquests.
Absolutely. I love what you say as well. It doesn't always have to relate in orgasm. I didn't know that up until about 2 years ago. You know, it actually took me going to a very specific like therapist to figure this out. And I was like, oh, you know, what does it mean? You know, because in relationships, things change, right? Like they do. And if you're already in a relationship and you're getting sober and then you're like, sex got weird, you know, because the dynamic shifted or whatever, then I'm a big advocate for like going to couples therapy. We did a really amazing workshop with this woman here in France and talked a lot about this stuff. And then I totally shifted my perspective around, I was just like on orgasm train, or the pressure you put on having to make somebody else come or expecting that for yourself is huge. Like anything, it doesn't allow the natural kind of development of things. Like there's so much in between. And yeah,
actually, it's really interesting because I didn't like being hugged when I was a drinker. I suspect I didn't, A, probably got in the way of the glass, and B, I probably felt I didn't deserve it. So actually, one of my biggest gains since giving up drinking is opening myself up to hugging, not just to my intimate partners, but to friends and other people. And I've become a hugger.
Oh, lush.
Who knew? And actually, there's a lot to got from that. Snogging and hugging, you know, it doesn't really all have to be about the innie and outie of sex.
Yeah, 100%.
And that leads me on to another discussion, which is, you know, we often put a lot of pressure on our sexual relationship to be the be all and end all of everything, but they aren't the only relationships we have in our lives. How did you find new friends? How did you begin to evolve your other friendships? And did you learn that there are other things, that people have different things to offer you? Did you cast any friends aside?
I did have to a little bit. Oh, I hate that I had to do that, but it was like self-preservation. And I always remember, actually, it was a conversation with my dad, weirdly, but he was like, think about the tree in autumn, the leaves shed and then it grows new ones. And I love that analogy because some people did. I know, Dad. They do have to shed a little bit. Like there were definitely some fair weather friends, you know, and they just didn't. I don't know. The relationships were, they just weren't the same.
But that would have happened if you'd been sober all your life. You know, my friend always says you have friends for season, a reason or a lifetime.
Oh,
and there is that, you know, even if you had been sober all your life, there would be people who come in and out of your life because they have lives too. And sometimes it doesn't all match up.
Totally. Totally.
Yeah. And there's that whole like adage of like the ones who mind don't matter and the ones who matter don't mind. Like, I was very afraid of like losing a lot when I got sober, just because all of my relationships kind of resolved around partying. And, you know, a lot of those people are actually sober today, which is really nice. Like I might have been the pioneer in that situation, but it's really always exciting when you can kind of pass on a toolkit that you have as a result of kind of either drinking mindfully or ceasing to drink, because somebody who you used to drink with is like, okay, enough, how'd you do it? And it can be really rewarding to kind of connect like that. And again, the majority of very close relationships I have today are with sober people, just because it's like, it can be super nice to know that like especially based on what I do for a living, like I used to prior in the pre-COVID times, like a lot of time with people who are on drugs or drinking. But the closest relationships in my life today are, I have faith that when we're interacting, we're like on the same plane, which could be like, I know that when I was interacting with sober people, when I was super fucked up, like I was in a totally different universe, you know, and I didn't really care about them or their needs, or like, didn't, you know, think of them as, they were like objects, not humans. So it's been very helpful kind of within the path of and within sobriety to like have a gang that I know is like alongside, you know, and that we are doing this together. The community part, I think, is, and I mean, it's a club soda, you know, is really important and really special and rewarding.
I think like community is the superfood of behavior change, connecting with others. And you both talk about influencing others to change. And of course, that's a key part of it. You're an active role model just by being there and doing what you're doing. I think there's a really interesting thread that you pick up on, which is, you know, that idea that you have friends who are alongside you. How do you begin to find some of those? They just happen by accident. Lots of people still, just as much as we're anxious about finding relationships, we're anxious about finding friends. We don't even know where to begin to start. Mm. Where would you start looking for friends?
I think in other sober forums, of which there are plenty these days, so many. And and just daring to be vulnerable, I think, in any situation. Not like, oh my God, I'm broken. But I definitely like connected with people and met new people because I dared to like ask for help and ask questions. And then we grow together and we learn from each other. And, you know, people who are sober generally, for the most part, love being sober, right? So they want to share the fucking joy that's palpable from them. So you can ask questions and then who knows, you know, it clicks or it doesn't click. And then you move on and meet other people. Lou?
I mean, I don't know. My like opening line, if I'm in a social situation when somebody asks me how I am, my default is like, I'm feeling socially awkward. How are you? You know, and I feel like kind of holding the fact that like, yes, I mean, my options sucked. Like it was like die or get sober or like live in misery. So I chose get sober and now I'm stuck here with all my feelings and like, I'm okay with it. And I don't have to pretend that I'm feeling like totally fantastic and like delighted to be here all the time, because like my default is kind of socially anxious, but that doesn't mean I'm not like friendly and grateful and like totally okay. And I think that is it's a nice icebreaker. Like I remember when I first got sober and was like allowed out of the asylum, I used to carry around a little notebook that had questions to ask strangers. And I would bring it to the club, you know, I would like go out dancing by myself and like people would come up to me because I'd be sitting writing in a notebook like a creep. And then I would ask them a question. And this might be like a super like, okay, you were 20 and like a cute girl, you could probably get away with a lot. But like at that level of like, I truly don't know how to behave myself. So I'm going to come up with some tools and technologies that might feel super fucking geeky, but at the same time, like they are about connectivity, you know, like I do the beauty of getting sober has really helped. Like, as I mentioned, kind of, create like I thou, like real human relationships and connections with other people, as opposed to just like treating other people as objects or who to help me meet my needs, you know? So kind of one beautiful technology is real curiosity about who you're talking to and the joy of growing with people who are on the same a similar path as you in sobriety is that often I can't really see my own progress, but I can definitely see somebody else's. And so that kind of mutual aid and that reflection of like, I see you like healing. I see you like being a normal person as opposed to just a dickhead all the time.
I see it in clubs. It's so exciting to see people progress and they're not noticing it themselves.
Yeah.
And I love that way that you talk about the fact that you're now capable of meeting the needs of other people. That feels great, doesn't it? Being able to actually listen and not be thinking about where to get the next drink from, but instead be able to listen and go, actually, I can support and help here. And that must be the same in terms of relationships as well, in terms of both your intimate relationships and sexual relationships. Is that part of that journey as well?
Totally. I think being present for your partner is like one of the greatest gifts you can give your partner. I don't know how Mikey and I are good together and continue to have a really healthy marriage is like we're present for each other and in the whole space. Like if I always say like now I'm playing the maracas and you're doing the triangle or whatever, like we've got different roles in the band.
Only percussion band.
Only percussion band, absolutely. And so we take it in turns, you know, and give each other front row, back row, and, you know, and I totally just want to go back to this point about like writing in the notebook. I remember when I first used to go to parties, I was like, what the fuck do I do? And somebody said to me, here are the questions you should ask. People love talking about themselves. Just ask them questions. And it's the best thing to do. It so worked. I stayed at this party all bloody night just by simply, I don't think I talked about myself at all, which was such a relief because I desperately didn't want to because I felt so awful. But I kept up the kind of like the social oiling by just being like, oh, what do you do? Where do you live? What brings you to this party? Who do you know? Try doing that in another language is kind of a bit fuck shit. But for the most part, if you're in but it can be really interesting.
I mean, if you think about it, one of the most amazing things in this world is meeting new people. And somehow socially and culturally, we've reduced it to something we can only do if we're half pissed. So, you know, it's a really weird situation. And to be able to have that confidence, to be able to do that is superb and absolutely amazing. So
especially if
you can also do it.
Ask it weird.
Yeah, but you can also do it even if you're not confident. Because I was really not confident going to those parties, but I desperately didn't want to give up the ghost of socializing. It felt really important, like, to still be among people. And so I had these questions, but they were the only thing that kept me from not, like, melting, you know? It's like, just very pokey of questions. But that was just me. I liked it.
So guys, I just want to thank you very much. We've actually gone from sex to friendship, which is meant to be the other way around, isn't it? From friendship to sex. But anyway, we don't always do things the right way around. Tell us where we can find your podcast and where we can find you both on social media. Louisa, start. You start.
You can find the podcast at Fuck Yeah Sober Sex on Instagram or Sober Sex Podcast at Twitter and myself personally at LOUISAHHH at Instagram and Louisa Official with the three H's on Facebook or LOUISAHHH four H's on Twitter just to confuse you. And Rose?
I am Rosie Romaine on Instagram and my website is lavienrosecoach.com. That's lavienrosecoach.com or in English.
Don't worry, we'll put them on the podcast blog and all of that sort of stuff and share it on social as well. Can I thank you both for your time? I definitely want to chat to you guys more. You're absolutely amazing. And I'm gonna let you go now. So thank you very much. This podcast is brought to you by Club Soda. You can find out more about what we do on joinclubsoda.com and on our social handles at joinclubsoda.com.